Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Yes, I played hooky last night. I'm a bad, bad person. But when I explain to you why I played hooky last night, perhaps you'll be forgiven. I hope you will be. I was down in the Coal River Valley, and I was awfully glad to be down there. It was an evening meeting. And I was down there for quite a little while. I didn't get home till a little bit after midnight last night. All I can tell you is it was a fascinating meeting. I learned more stuff from a person who really, really knows his stuff about where the future of this continuing effort to end the sacrifice of Appalachian people and their homes and communities is going than I knew. And that's always a bonus. I learned fascinating things. I sat there and, let's put it this way. One of those things that John Fox is so fond of talking about, I found out that it's more or less happening. And it's happening on a fabulous, fast, fantastic, fascinating, inspiring, wonderful scale. And it really does represent a step into the future. And it's going to be amazing. So that's where I was. Big weekend plans. This is Friday on the front porch, of course. Big, big weekend plans. This Sunday, I guess you could call them the patron saint band of this radio network, the Drive-By Truckers, are going to be playing in Fair Charleston, West Virginia. They're going to be playing on Sunday. And in something that was nothing short of inspiring and downright near tear-bringing, your friend and mine, our buddy David in Tennessee, made a couple of contacts. And the next thing I know, I have found out that Ferg and I will be able to go down and see the show. We're on the guest list. And what's more, go backstage. Wow. Just wow. It's an inspiring moment for me and an exciting moment for me because, shucks, I love the band. But to take Ferg with me, who is a little budding musician in his own right, and let him this will be his first concert ever. And I can't think of a more fitting and appropriate concert than this one. To see the Drive-By Truckers, one of, if not the best performing live acts going today. They work tirelessly, and they don't know how to do a bad show. It's going to be just a riveting experience for Ferg, who will probably have his to the extent that he's able to focus, because he's going to be going just nuts as it is. Watching the guitar players, Patterson Hood and Mike Cooley, I'm sure he'll be watching the drumming as well. And he'll be hearing the poetry that lies inherent in their songwriting a genius. This is one of those beautiful, beautiful little moments that makes the horn so much different from anything else happening anywhere else. This is one of those reach-out moments. This is one of those moments when I realize that, yeah, by God, we have made ourselves a little family here. And so there, well, I'm virtually beside myself. Ferg, on the other hand, is vibrating like a struck tuning fork. And it was real cute, too, the way we laid it on him. I knew what was going on before he got home from school. And I had spoken to Agnes about it, and she was just tickled pink. And so when he got in the door, Agnes being fun-loving and wicked and everything, looked at her teenage son and said, "Go see your father. You know, that's never good. Go see your father." And Ferg walked into where I was, said, and he looked at me with this totally bewildered look on his face and said, "What did I do?" Because, you know, "go see your father," it just doesn't have any good to it. And I said, "Just sit down." Because I realized what had happened. This part hadn't been planned. This was Agnes working Agnes's magic. But, you know the old saying, just follow my lead, just play along. And as soon as he said, "What did I do?" he said, "What did I do? Mom told me to come see you." And so I put on the dry, barren face, and I said, "Sit down." And by now, he's a mess. And, you know, third time, "What did I do?" And I said, "We're going somewhere Sunday." "Where are we going?" "We're going to Charleston Sunday." "Why are we going to Charleston?" And then I smiled at him real big, and I said, "We're going to go see, you and me are going to go see the drive-by truckers, and we're going backstage." And it was a beautiful thing. It was simply a magnificent thing. I've witnessed this young man experience 13 Christmases, 13 Easters, 13 Halloweens, 13 birthdays, New Year's, 4th of July. This was every one of them that he has ever had all rolled into one. When I said truck vibrating like a struck tuning fork, that is probably the understatement of the year. He's still not okay. He said, "I'm going to go figure out, I'm going to go and sit down and write 1,000 different ways I can thank you." And then he stuck his head back in the door and he said, "No, I'm not. I'm going to go and listen again to everything they ever recorded. And then I'll write 1,000 things." And then he said, "Wait, I've got to get my guitar. I want to have my guitar while I'm listening. I want to see if I can play anything they're playing." And I realized what magnificence happens inside this little circle of friends, comrades, allies, that makes this such a life-changing experience for me. And if your emails are to be taken at face value, which I do, makes this such a wonderful and fulfilling experience for you as well. You know, there's a great song off of, I believe, Decoration Day, where they sing. "Rock and roll means well, but it can't help telling young boys lies." And sweet lies they are indeed. and everyone who's ever heard the siren song and wanted to and wanted to be able to play that, whatever that was, knows the draw. And so I have on my hands right now, until Sunday evening, a 13-year-old boy who for the next 48 hours is going to be experiencing the night before Christmas. He's that stoked. And so we've already talked. And thank you, David in Tennessee. Thank you. Ferg and I have already talked, and he knows to whom he owes his thank yous. And we have also talked about the fact that Ferg will provide on Monday evening his first ever rock concert review, assuming, of course, he is capable of human speech at that point. You know, assuming that he's capable of something before or beyond. Oh, it was cool! Because generally that's, you know, when you're reduced to little more than monosyllables, that's about what you get. But he's stoked. He is psyched. And so am I. Oh, this is going to be fun. Past fun. Yeah. Kid A from the chat room, Michael. Oh, now you're just making me jealous, Bob. And he says, and for that matter, I'm going to lift a toast this weekend to David in Tennessee. Bless him. You guys are going to have an effing blast. Peace, love, and rock and roll, Kid A. After the Charleston gig, the band is, I'm told by our other resident DBT aficionado. Well, we've got a handful of them, but our South Carolina correspondent, David, our other David, that after the Charleston gig, they've got a gig in Charleston, South Carolina. So they're just getting their Charlestons out of the way. All I can say is, guys, while you're here in Charleston, West Virginia, don't order the shrimp and grits. Wait till you get to the real deal. Up here, brown beans, biscuits, and gravy. Down there, shrimp and grits. Okay? Just so, yeah. Charleston to Charleston. We have our first affirmation of teen rock reporter Ferg. He says, it is going to be like Almost Famous for Ferg. Oh, that's Michael, Kid A. So it's gonna be a heck of a weekend, and beyond me explaining why I was playing hooky last night, I didn't figure you would mind if I just told you where the weekend was going and what it was going to be about. And Agnes is so proud of her little part in that ruse. Go see your father. That she's grinning like the Cheshire Cat. There's nothing left but her smile. So that's how we get Friday on the Front Porch started. And no, Marty. He says, now the burning question will be in the same vein as Las Vegas. Will what happens in Charleston stay in Charleston? No. Come Monday night, it all goes out over the series of tubes. It's not a big truck. And we will send you an audio internet of how it all went down and what all happened. God, I'm excited. And I have a promise to keep because Ferg has a little problem right now with sitting still. And all of the music is stored back here in the studio computers. So as soon as the show's over, I have to load an MP3 player up with nothing but truckers because he can't sit still. But, you know, like he said, Dad, I gotta have it all. I gotta listen to everything all over again. I've heard it all, but I want to hear it again. I want to hear a lot about it. And so I've got an MP3 player to load. Oh, this is beautiful. This is just as exciting as can be. And of course, in this evening's show, speaking of exciting, you know that I am susceptible to what some would call geekery, but others would say is a healthy relationship with the idea of the human future. I trust by now you have seen the news from NASA. This is big news. This is big news. A few weeks back, some of your tax dollars were used, and I would argue reasonably so, to, for all intents and purposes, throw a rock at the moon. NASA sent up a couple of probes to the moon, and then they just nosedived them, nosedove. Oh, dear. We're in English quicksand. Sent them careening, there we go, into a crater near the south lunar pole, where they suspected they might find ice. You know, because the moon is a dry and barren, stale, airless, vacuum-enclosed place. And one of the great stumbling blocks to any notion of extended human occupation of our lovely satellite has been the fact that we human beings don't do well without water. But that nose-diving probe slammed into that crater and sent up a shower, a spray, if you will, which instruments then recorded to find out what was in it. And wonder of wonders, it was ice. Not just a little crystal here and a crystal there, but a great big shooshing spray of ice. Agnes wants Moonbase Alpha. I'm more of a Robert A. Heinlein guy, and I want Luna City and Novi Len, Hong Kong Luna, that whole. But we've talked on this program from time to time about Carl Sagan's Pale Blue Dot. And I just, when I heard the news today, I wondered. I thought, oh, if only Carl Sagan was here to see this. He would have been rendered, I would guess, almost as speechless as my son was at the news of going to see the truckers on Sunday. There's ice on the moon. Ice, ice, baby, ice. And they're saying that there's a lot more of it, and that it may have been left there by an impacting comet, or it may be just deposited in pockets all throughout the lunar surface and under the lunar surface. And if it is, wow. As Marty notes, if true, and the water can be mined from the moon, as it were, that'll make long-term missions easier with that much less to have to get off of the Earth. Exactly. And tell Agnes if we get Moonbase Alpha, leave the nuclear waste on the Earth. Oh, we are such sci-fi people, aren't we? And we haven't even gotten to our obligatory Star Trek reference. No, instead, I think we've substituted the Robert A. Heinlein reference. And if you're wondering what I'm talking about with Robert A. Heinlein, it's a classic novel called The Moon is a Harsh Mistress. A lot of you have read it. It's got a lot of libertarian garbage in it, but it's a great story and, in principle, theoretically fascinating. Our buddy David in South Carolina notes, going back to the DBT's announcement, he says, now wait until my 12-year-old daughter Candace hears this. She's another DBT fan. We'll never forget the sweet note that Patterson wrote me when my grandson Jacob passed away. I know Patterson and the band were busy and is always on the road, yet he took time to write and express condolences. It's the simple things that mean so much. And they are, that band is a decent bunch, and it is led by one of the most decent people in rock and roll, period. And outside of rock and roll, for that matter. So we've got some localized optimism. And you know what? We've got some down-the-road optimism, too. There's something inspiring about the human urge to explore, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go. Stop. Stop. Stop it, Spock. Seriously, the only impediment to this is that I know somewhere in Air Force Space Command, there's some balding, pot-bellied general, or else he's a crew-cut, flat-topped, skinny old whatever with a bunch of jewelry on his shoulder board saying, wonder how we can use water on the moon to blow up the brown people. Because, you know, that's always the risk, is the militarization of space. Wonder, could we get some death rays on the moon? Dang, I bet that'd be fun. But the thing is, you don't want to do too much on the moon, because someday the moon might want to be independent, and then it could be aimed at, you know, us. Wow, I'm about 500 years out now, aren't I? But it was exciting. I love that stuff. This is Friday on the Front Porch. We can talk about anything. Thank you. I was amazed the other evening when I got a PM from the chat room from, I believe it was UK Blues, saying, Bob, here's your geeky story for the night. And it was a story about an archaeological announcement out of the Sahara regarding the find of the missing, lost Persian army. Mentioned in the ancient Greek historian Herodotus, long thought to have been, that's just legend. No, that legend had meat on its bones until it was lost in it. It was an army of the Persian king Cambyses, one of the last of the true Achaemenids. To the Persians, to be an Achaemenid was sort of like being a Plantagenet in England, or one of the real members of the Julian clan of the Caesars. That was, you know, the real deal. And Cambyses' army was lost in the desert after a particularly remote Egyptian temple. The priests there refused to acknowledge Cambyses as God. So he sent an army marching on them. And like something out of a really, really bad movie featuring Brendan Fraser, a big sandstorm whipped up and just buried them. Just buried them. Okay, the first Mummy movie was all right, Agnes, but the other one, the one with the skeletons marching, no, please. I thought that movie would never end. And then by the time they got around to making the next one, and Rachel Weisz wouldn't even sign on to it, you know, when she wouldn't sign on to it, you knew it had to be a dog. I know you loved it. I've got a giggling Agnes back here tonight. So that's the optimistic stuff and the fascinating stuff and the stuff that makes it great to be around and see things like this happen. Ice on the moon, you know? Because, see, if you get to the moon, then maybe you get to Mars. And suddenly it's not one pale blue dot. It's a pale blue dot, a pale blue dot, a pale gray speck, and a pale red dot. And from there, the universe is the limit. Oh, wouldn't you love to see it? But there's also serious news to go into this evening. Hard to avoid. And there's some fun stuff, too. How many times have we said it? God is a God of irony. And the God of irony stepped forth earlier today after it turned out that the Republican Party, namely the Republican National Committee, that their health insurance policy for its employees covers elective abortions. Why, yes, really. Now, bear in mind, the Republican National Committee's official platform, including a plank declaring that any aliens landing from planet Zoblock are officially designated undocumented immigrant workers, and the fluoride in children's ice cream is a communist plot, and things like that. It's also they've got a platform plank that says that abortion is a fundamental assault on innocent human life. Well, in the wake of the Stupak-Pitts Amendment, which would, of course, ban the little insurance company dummied up, frauded up, rubed up, phonied up, so-called exchanges that used to be called co-ops, from providing abortion coverage to anyone who was let into them, if any federal monies were, to be paid out, in the corporate welfare insurance bailout to come. Well, it turns out that after agitating for that kind of stuff, not even voting for the bill, the Republicans are providing exactly that coverage to their members who work for the RNC. Whoopsie. Thank you, Irony God. Thank you. There's Newt Gingrich out there saying, I'd like to outlaw abortions. On the other hand, however, his 527 group, American Solutions for Winning the Future, you remember that group. That's the one that offered an entrepreneurship award to a porn video superstore and a strip joint. His 527 has health care through the same 527 through the same company that affords health care to the RNC. That would be Care First Blue Cross Blue Shield. And right there on its website, Care First Blue Cross Blue Shield says they cover elective abortions unless the employer specifically opts out. Representative Eric Cantor, Republican of Virginia, you've seen him. That's the guy who blew off important national business in order to go to a Britney Spears concert. Remember him? He also provides his campaign workers with health care through Care First Blue Cross Blue Shield. Now, we don't know for sure that they provide, but, well, we kind of do. Because once they got caught with their hands in the abortion candy jar, the Republican Party moved extra quick. And it was announced later in the day after the announcement about them paying for abortions. It was announced later in the day, according to the Associated Press, a chagrined GOP chairman Michael Steele has told Republican National Committee staff to immediately stop providing RNC employees with insurance for elective abortions. Well, you know, that around-the-block line of RNC women out there just having abortions for the hell of it, you know, elective abortions. What are you doing today, Sally? Well, I don't know, Linda. I think I'm just going to go down and get my uterus scraped. Well, why not? Sounds like, oh, well, let's get cocktails and do it together. You know, that's the way the Republican National Committee and Republicans in general make it sound like it's just used for contraception. But it's been stopped. Stop it. Michael Steele said the money from our loyal donors should not be used for this purpose. I don't know why this policy existed in the past, but it will not exist under my administration. Consider this issue settled, which means you stenographers from the for-profit media can go away now. Don't look. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain with the coat hangers. Quit looking. We're not going to do this anymore, okay? And for those of you scoring at home, or for those of you who are alone, the issue that we are to consider is settled, has been in place in the policy of the Republican National Committee for 18 years. That includes the presidencies of Pappy Bush and the 8 years in which they railed about all things sexual and abortion a lot, the presidency of Bill Clinton. It also includes the 8 years of the culture of life under George W. Bush. And you just gotta wonder how many abortions the Republican Party personally funded. One of them could have cured cancer! They could have been a snowflake baby. They could have been a quiver baby. They could have been an arrow in the quiver of Jesus for a Christian nation. Yeah, you know it's serious because a memo earlier from Republican National Committee Chief of Staff Ken McKay to the organization's members said Steele has been engaged by phone on this issue. Oh, well, if Chairman Steele took a phone call over, wow, he's clearly engaged, definitely engaged. One for good, two for bad, definitely engaged. Of course, this is not my underwear. My underwear comes from Kmart. Yeah, they got asked on Wednesday whether they were providing abortions. And according to the RNC memo, upon learning of this story, at the chairman's direction, we immediately contacted the executive committee. We will be scheduling a call with the executive committee in the immediate future to discuss this matter more fully. Harumph! Harumph! And get a harumph out of that guy. Harumph! Chairman Steele had already called for an official review of our health insurance policy, along with a number of other operational items. And probably wanted to find out how many child abusers he had in his ranks, too. But mercy sakes, I am shocked, to find that Republicans have been providing abortions. I mean, why would they need to? Why would they need that coverage? They're all engaged in traditional heterosexual marriage, ain't they? Now, then again, the Republican Party is the biggest single closet in the United States. But even so, I mean, this is the party of purity balls and staying a virgin until I have a heterosexual marriage. And after that, why would you need an abortion? What does God need with Starship? There, I got it out of the way. The obligatory Star Trek reference. I'm so proud. So there's that. From the He's Back department, Ted Haggard. Remember the Crystal Methodist? The guy who had a, how long was it? A 3-year-long relationship with a male prostitute? Well, he's had his first church service. He invited 110 people to his homes where he did some praying the other night. And he declared that he was never a hateful anti-gay guy. Hell no. No, he wasn't. He wasn't a hateful anti-gay guy. When he said that we need the federal marriage amendment, why we need the federal marriage amendment is for the sake of the children. It would be devastating for the children of our nation, for the future of Western civilization, for us to say that the homosexual unions or lesbian unions or any alteration of that has the moral equivalence of a heterosexual monogamous marriage. Now, that's not hateful. No. No, so the other night he said, I was always well aware of my own personal struggles. I particularly liked to struggle when the mink-lined cuffs were on my wrists and ankles. No, he didn't say that. But my desire was to be more godly. Kind of depends on which god you are. I mean, there's some pretty kinky gods in the Indian pantheon, aren't they? I was never a religious right hateful anti-gay guy secretly running off except right at the end. I'd say right at the end, before the crisis. That did develop a little bit stronger. What? Okay, let's try to do that without interruptions, Bob. This was his little speech to his opening church service there in Colorado. I was always well aware of my own personal struggles, but my desire was to be more godly. I was never a religious right hateful anti-gay guy, secretly running off, except right at the end. I'd say right at the end before the crisis. That did develop a little bit stronger. Secretly running off? Right at the end? As far as I can tell, Ted Haggard secretly ran off right at the end for 3 solid years. It was good for me to go through the Christian hatred of people believing it. I was a gay man and hating me so strongly because of it. And so because of it, my compassion for the homosexual community has gone up incredibly. Stop with the pantomime, Agnes. You do that way too well. My compassion for the homosexual community has gone up incredibly. But then again, you know, if your compassion goes up from some negative number to 0.001, I guess you could say that could be having gone up incredibly because, wait, see, this is one of those Dr. Freud moments. Incredibly means unbelievably. And yes, it is unbelievable. Not unbelievable as in fabulous, but unbelievable as in, I don't believe you, you lying sack of crap right-wing fundamentalist, you. Right? Right. But it was rather nice of him to acknowledge Christian hatred. It was good for me to go through the Christian hatred of people. Thank you, sir. May I have another? Is this where I cue up John Mellencamp singing Hurts So Good? Or Lou Reed, maybe? I don't know. Take a walk on the wild side, Ted. No, it's going to be a rather busy night. And you know the number to call, of course. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or locally, it's 304-658-3333. Email comes into bobkincaid@gmail.com. And you can chime in as you wish. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is the horn.
Popularity breeds contempt.
Give me a time to realize my crime. Let me love.
Yes, I'm shameless, and no, I could not resist it. So, yeah, there. How can you talk about Ted Haggard and not play Culture Club? You know, I have a whole raft of volunteer producers here, Marty, who said, "No, you cue up the scene of Animal House with Kevin Bacon receiving his bond of obedience swats. Thank you, sir. May I have another?" And just checking email, a little scattered. For some reason, I'm all nervous back here with Agnes in the room. And she just decided to hang out with me on a Friday. I'm afraid I'm going to say something wrong. Thank you, ma'am. May I have another? But anyway. No, in all seriousness, I suppose you did catch the news today that we're going to try Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. It was announced by Attorney General Eric Holder. And they're going to try him probably in New York in front of a federal judge. They've got to indict him and all of that fun stuff. And I hate to admit it because it's like admitting that you have a porn fetish or something. But whenever I see one of these stories coming out, I do it. I know. Hi, I'm Bob. Hi, Bob. And I am powerless to resist the urge to watch Fox News whenever something comes out that I know is going to drive them absolutely pearl-clutching, bat crazy. And so as soon as I knew that the thing was announced about Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, I click, because Fox News is all I get here. And sure enough, there it was, pearl clutching in full clutch, I guess. Some babblehead on Fox breathlessly explaining, "The Obama administration intends to bring Khalid Sheikh Mohammed to New York City. New York City!" And suddenly it was a Pace salsa commercial. New York City! To New York City and try him for his role in the 9/11. What are we to think about that? Well, first of all, buddy, you work for Fox, so we know that you quit thinking the minute you drew your first paycheck. But secondly, if it's a serious instead of a rhetorical question, because it was asked rhetorically by Fox in terms of, what do you think about that? That ought to be going to... Well, what you think about that is that secret socialist Muslim Barack Obama is trying to tear this country down. Because he hates America. Because he's a Muslim. And he doesn't have a long-form birth certificate. His mother was an atheist. But the fact of the matter is, and you and I both know this, that this is what should have been happening all along. I almost said this is what should have been happened. What is this, Flowers for Algernon, and I'm just getting dumb again? But this is what should have been happening all along. You'll notice, among other things, that since the Spanish caught and punished and tried fully and fairly within their system of laws, the people responsible for the Madrid train bombing, there haven't been any more Madrid train bombings. But that didn't slow Fox down. The idea of giving someone who committed mass murder in the United States something approaching a trial in a court of competent jurisdiction is, for some reason or another, harrowing to Fox. So, you know, I left the room. I came back a little bit later, and what do I hear? It's, who's the... the guy in the dress, the Republican, Rudy Giuliani. Rudy Giuliani's there guesting on Fox, and he's being asked, well, isn't Khalid Sheikh Mohammed's defense going to be to blame George Bush? And I was almost thunderstruck when Rudy Giuliani said, well, George Bush was president in 2001. Beat. But I got to give this to George Bush. He kept us safe from those radical Muslims every day he was in office. And I'm sitting there thinking, well, every day except September 11th, 2001, and the entire planning stages for the thing, and all the days that he, you know, the cast aside things, the memos that said things like, you know, bin Laden determined to strike inside U.S., or sending off Hart Rudman report about airport security that said, you know, somebody's going to come through and they're going to get through and they're going to cause real problems. And he gave that to the guy who was the boss of Brownie and said, you all figure this out. I'm on vacation. George Bush kept us safe every day he was in office. But then Giuliani goes off, and I wish I had the audio of it because it would be fun to dissect it phrase by phrase. He goes off on this tear about how George Bush did the right thing and that we can't be giving these people trials because they're war criminals, because 9/11 was an act of war against the United States. We didn't give trials to the people who did Pearl Harbor. No, we dropped a nuclear device on them. No. Actually, we did. It wasn't exactly anything you'd call a fair trial. Dugout Doug MacArthur was in charge of them. And by then, he was crazier than a sprayed roach. But he said, they've got to be... they were soldiers on a battlefield. And they're not entitled to a criminal trial inside the United States with habeas corpus and the big board. And I really hate what stuff that kind of right-wing blather does to me, because I wind up screaming at the television. And then I look down and I go, holy crap, I've turned into my father. But Giuliani had a point. If they were agents of war and soldiers in a war, then they would not necessarily be afforded a federal criminal trial, you know, with a jury and a prosecutor and indictments and a grand jury and motions and a judge and an appeal process and music in the background, dum dum, and all of that. But there's only one problem, and of course, you know, Fox being a manipulator of reality, one of the things that came through is that, you know, as usual, you get half the story. You know, it's like a bologna sandwich. You get all the bologna and none of the bread. Because if, as Giuliani claims, and I'm sorry, my brain is forever seared with that image of him in a dress. And you could tell that he was enjoying it. If, as Giuliani claims, they are to be treated as prisoners of war, which he said they were, and therefore war criminals, well then, something else the Bush administration did creates a problem with that. And by extension, makes George and Dick and the rest of the crowd liable to be tried at The Hague, which, of course, we all know should have happened a long time ago, and we hope someday will. And that is, if you are a prisoner of war, you're entitled to the protections of the Geneva Convention. Which, of course, was described as quaint. I forget. Was it Torture Boy Gonzalez or Electrocute Their Testicles You? who said that the Geneva Conventions were quaint. I can't keep up with the war criminals anymore, frankly. There's just too damn many of them. But they, you know, they want their cake and they want to eat it too. So assuming that they will be criminally tried for the criminal thugs they are. Ah, it was John Yoo. Thanks, News Ninja Gene. These guys are punks and thugs, and they need to be tried as such. Their thuggishness is not diminished by the number of people or enhanced by the number of people that they killed. They're murderers. They are not soldiers because they are not operating on the behalf of a nation state. That was one of the problems with going to war with Al-Qaeda. I've looked all over the globe. I've used the Google Earth. I've got the tubes plugged up, trying to find that nation on the globe called Al-Qaeda. Doesn't exist. So on the surface of it, we are doing the right thing by going after a criminal trial for Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. You know, it's funny, a few minutes ago, I called up the article about Khalid Sheikh Mohammed over at Salon. Glenn Greenwald has done a great job with it. And, of course, it's that ubiquitous photo of him with the stretched-out shirt-type thing. And it's the picture that was taken of him after he'd been, waterboarded every 6 hours for a month and a half or something. Agnes looks over and says, "Is that porn guy? Ron Jeremy or something?" I said, no, that's just what you just look like Ron Jeremy after you've been waterboarded four times a day for a month and a half. Yes, you do need glasses, Agnes. Apparently we all need glasses around here. But therein lies the rub. We tortured this man. We tortured him repeatedly. We turned his brain into a jiggling puddle of mush between his ears. And evidence of torture is not, technically speaking, unless you can find a really good excuse, admissible in a court of law. In fact, torture and the presence of it and the evidence of it is enough to render the evidence gathered as a result thereof inadmissible under the doctrine of what's called the fruit of the poisonous tree. If the tree is poisoned, the fruit that falls off of it is deemed to be so as well. And that's where Glenn Greenwald comes in. If you want analysis of what the trial of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is going to be, you need to read Glenn Greenwald over at Salon. He's a sharp cookie, that Glenn Greenwald. And what he's pointed out, he says that the announcement that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and four other 9/11 defendants will be brought from Guantanamo to New York to stand trial in a real criminal court for the crimes they are accused of committing is a decision I really wish I could praise, as it's clearly both politically risky and the right thing to do. He says an open criminal trial under our standard system of justice, accompanied by basic precepts of due process, is exactly the just and smart means for punishing those responsible for terrorist attacks. It announces to the world, including the Muslim world, that we have enough faith, and I like this, that we have enough faith in our rules of justice to apply them equally to everyone, including to Muslim radicals accused of one of the worst crimes in American history. Numerous family members of the 9/11 victims have long argued that real trials for the accused perpetrators are vital to providing real justice for what was done. But then Glenn Greenwald closes the trap. The problem is that this decision does not stand alone. Instead, it's accompanied by this. And this was the announcement about the announcement. Holder will also announce that a major suspect in the bombing of the USS Cole, Abd el Rahim al-Nashri, will face justice before a military commission, as will a handful of other detainees to be identified at the same announcement. It was not immediately clear where commission-bound detainees like al-Nashri might be sent, yada yada, but a military brig in South Carolina, yada yada. And Glenn Greenwald notes, so what we have here is not an announcement that all terrorism suspects are entitled to real trials in a real American court. Instead, what we have is a multi-tiered justice system. And whenever you see something like that, you kind of got a, you know, little hairs on the back of your neck stand up. Because that doesn't exist, a multi-tiered justice system. What's that famous phrase that applies to American jurisprudence? Oh, yeah, equal justice under law. Well, when you have a multi-tiered system, as Glenn Greenwald describes it, then you have anything but equal justice. You have multi-tiered justice. He said, instead, what we have here is a multi-tiered justice system where only certain individuals are entitled to real trials, namely, those whom the government is convinced ahead of time it can convict. Others for whom conviction is less certain will be accorded lesser due process, put in military commissions to which most leading Democrats vehemently objected when created under Bush. Presumably, others still, those who the government believes cannot be convicted in either form, will simply be held indefinitely with no charge, a power the administration recently announced it intends to preserve based on the same theories used by Bush-Cheney administration to claim that power. Meet the new boss. Same as the old boss, where that's concerned, at least. Glenn Greenwald says, a system of justice which accords you varying levels of due process based on the certainty that you'll get just enough to be convicted isn't a system of justice at all. It's a rigged game of show trials. Show trials? Show trials? Where did we used to hear that phrase? Soviet Union? Stalinist show trials? People's Republic of China? Show trials? Yeah, I think so. That's what we called it whenever somebody we didn't like was using their system of so-called justice to impose some sort of harsh reality on someone they didn't like. Show trials. And so, we have a situation where Glenn Greenwald finds himself writing, the Obama DOJ is now explicitly picking and choosing different levels of due process in the very same announcement. We can give that defendant a trial because we know we'll win, but that one over there needs to go to a military commission because we're less sure, and that highlights how manipulative this justice system is. This is sad. Because on the one hand, you know, the Obama administration is going to be pilloried from this for the right wing. If Attorney General Holder came out and said he was going to order Khalid Sheikh Mohammed to be shot at dawn, the right wing would come out with a press release screaming, "We want him shot twice!" If he said that he was going to be hanged at dawn, the Republicans would scream, "We won't feel safe unless you hang him and then chop him into little bitty pieces." And I don't know if Barack Obama's figured out yet that there is no thing he can do that will please the right wing, and that if it does please the right wing, that's every indication in the world that he's gotten it wrong. Hence, Giuliani clutching at his pearls on Fox this afternoon. The right wing are so, you know, they're so tiny, but they're so loud. And you begin to wonder if we're ever going to make any progress forward whatsoever as long as they're babbling out. Then Glenn Greenwald brings it all home. The more consequential impact of Obama's decision is likely to be overlooked. We're now formally creating a multi-tiered justice system for accused Muslim terrorists where they only get the level of due process consistent with the state's certainty that it will win. Muhammad gets a real trial because he confessed, and we're thus certain we can win in court. Since we're less certain about al-Nashri, he'll be denied a trial and will only get a military commission. Others will be denied any process entirely and imprisoned indefinitely. The outcome is predetermined, and the process then shaped to assure it ahead of time, thus perfectly adhering to this exchange from Alice in Wonderland.
Let the jury consider their verdict, the king said for about the 20th time that day. No, no, said the queen. Sentence first, verdict after.
Stuff and nonsense, said Alice loudly.
The idea of having the sentence first.
Hold your tongue, said the queen, turning purple. I won't, said Alice. Off with her head, the queen shouted at the top of her voice.
How many times on this program have I said we're through the looking glass? Well, we are. And remember that our justice system is one that is based in precedent. It's not a code-based system. It's a common law-based system where the statutes are applied and then the judges applying the statutes interpret their plain meaning. And as such, the idea of a multi-tiered system of justice creates precedent for down the road. Think about it. Maybe this is a good example of the danger posed. We've all seen the dollar sign, right? It's an S with two bars through it, right? Wrong. That's just how it is now. Originally, the dollar sign was an S with the letter U imposed over it. U.S., United States. But over time and via usage and custom, the bottom semicircle of the U was carved away to leave an S with two bars through it. And that is now the universal sign for dollar. By extension, rules that are made at law for a singular purpose, think about Bush v. Gore, perhaps. This law does not make precedent and should never be used to blah, 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 blah. Isn't that what the freaks wrote when they installed George Bush? This is a single instance case when no such case exists at the bar of the Supreme Court in its entire history. So, while they're saying that, you know, this is for dealing with the terrorists, we're going to have a multi-tiered system of justice and we'll only give trials to the people we're pretty sure we can convict and as the likelihood of conviction becomes more compromised, so too will the justice and due process afforded them. I'm sure there's a lot of people in this country who think that's weak. Who want them, you know, shot at dawn, their bodies dragged through the streets, and then their corpses fed to the vultures and the jackals. We don't have jackals here, do we? Well, we can import some. The problem is what happens 100 years down the road. Because 100 years down the road, that multi-tiered system of justice can apply to all of us. Even Christians. Yes. Down the road, the habeas corpus protections that were taken out behind the barn and beaten to death under the Bush administration,
Well, that just applies to non-citizens. That just applies to them Muslims.
A few years down the road, and I'm not talking about any 100 or any 50, sweetheart. I'm talking about just a couple of years down the road, if it hasn't happened already. That can apply to you. Because that's the way this judicial system works. If you don't obey the rules, and the rules get bent, then sooner or later some pettifogging lawyer is going to look up and say, no, 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 see, back in 2009, they changed the rule. And that means that's what the rule is now, how they changed it. Or more likely, some prosecutor. Some prosecutor. Now, we all know the story of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, how he was caught and waterboarded, tortured for a month and a half, 2 months, every 4 hours. And in between those periods of waterboarding torture, he was tortured in other ways until he was willing to say that he killed Cock Robin and kidnapped the Lindbergh baby on the same day. But there is another case that is far more unsettling, and that is the case of an individual by the name of Omar Khadr, who is a Canadian citizen, who has been rotting away in the concentration camp at Guantanamo Bay for the last 7 years. For those of you wondering, at present, Omar Khadr is 22 years old. He was warehoused at Guantanamo Bay concentration camp when he was 15 years old. His crime is that he allegedly threw a grenade at an American soldier in Afghanistan. That act got him branded a terrorist. And he was brutally interrogated. Not just harsh interrogation techniques, that's what we call them. No, it was brutal. It was nothing that anybody with a conscience or any sense of moral decency would ever think appropriate to do to a 15-year-old. But then again, this is a country that routinely imprisons children for life for petty crimes. And it is done to our eternal and national shame. In that tape of the interrogation of Omar Khadr, he can be seen being forced to remove his clothing and displaying the wounds that were given to him in the course of the interrogation. In that tape, he cries out as any 16-year-old child would for his mother. When he's alone in the room where he's been questioned, he says simply, "Oh, mommy, oh, mommy." He has had his brain wrecked. Meanwhile, the American military says, well, he may just look like a kid, but he's actually a hardened terrorist. Let's see. And I'm just asking for the sake of argument. I'm not taking his side. But you're a kid in a faraway country, and someone comes running at you with a gun pointed at you. What do you do? It is alleged that he served as a translator for a top Al-Qaeda operative. You remember Sergeant Christopher Spear? He was the first one killed in Afghanistan, I believe. He was killed by a grenade. And Cotter was the only one alive in the rubble. And there is no testimony to indicate that Omar Cotter was the one who threw the grenade. And here's the punchline. Omar Cotter does not get a trial. A child captured on a battlefield does not get a trial. Both U.S. and Canadian defense teams have called for him to simply be sent home to Canada. The Obama administration has said no. Asked about Omar Cotter, Captain John Murphy, chief prosecutor in the military commission system, the kangaroo court system, said,
"My view is he should be prosecuted."
Note I said that Captain John Murphy is the chief prosecutor. Asking a prosecutor if someone should be prosecuted is like asking Colonel Sanders if a chicken should be fried. Omar Cotter has been in the concentration camp at Guantanamo Bay for 7 years. Never, not once, not one day, not ever, ever, ever has Omar Cotter ever been charged with a single crime. Not one. Not jaywalking, not stream littering. Nothing. He has simply been warehoused in a concentration camp during which he has grown from a tormented, terrified boy into an adult with at least a somewhat damaged mind. Does not get a trial in federal court. He gets a kangaroo court military commission where members of the military, applying not the federal criminal law, but the much stricter code that is left to their interpretation, and for whom at least 4 members of the Supreme Court of the United States believe to be more than adequate because Omar Cotter is not deserving of any rights, the power of death may be imposed. Equal justice under law. In the name of God, tell me how what we're doing to Omar Cotter constitutes equal justice under law. In the federal trial of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, if the evidence of his torture is not allowed in, and if the evidence of his torture, every 4 to 6 hours being waterboarded and God knows what in between for nearly 2 months, if that is not sufficient to bar his confession from introduction into evidence, then I think we can fairly say that the American system of justice is dead, 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 dead. I don't want this man to go free. But it is far better that 1,000 guilty go free than 1 innocent remain in prison. That's the very core principle that undergirds our entire system of justice. And it has been thrown out the window. Plain and simple. And that should be cause for concern for anyone who hopes to maintain the charade of the United States being a republic based on principles of representative democracy. Joe the Foxhole Atheist writes in and says, I decided a long time ago, 3 years, that if I ever get sent to the big house, my only statement in court or to the press will be, call me Snake Plissken, since that fantasy world from John Carpenter is what America is turning into. Is that an America we are ready to embrace? Where every essential element of the system of justice that was envisioned by our founding framers of the Constitution is simply scrapped in the name of fighting terrorism. Rudy Giuliani sat at that news desk today on Fox and said, well, I give him this. George Bush kept us safe every day he was in office. Well, there haven't been any more terrorist attacks, Rudy. Does that mean that Barack Obama has so far kept us safe every day he's been in office? But again, you only get half or less with the thugs from Fox News. It is sad, and what it does to our American body politic may be irreparable. And it may also be true. So that's where we find ourselves done with the first half of the program. Your thoughts are always welcome, and we will get right back to it after we take a little halfway mark break. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
The way I am. and money. The shit has hit the fan. Guns and money. Send lawyers, guns and money. Send lawyers, guns and money.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, November 12, 2009.
Lights out for Brazil. Brown pelican saved. America's lakes, not so much. A new threat to your sex life.
What?
Plus, clean coal lies about veterans on Veterans Day.
Say it ain't so. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of green news and snarky comment.
The American Coalition for Clean Coal Electricity, bullcrap artists, today's worst persons in the world.
That was Oberman, not me. I'd never say such a thing. This is your Green News Report. The Green News Report is brought to you by VelvetRevolution.us, cracking down on ideologues who incite violence over our airwaves. Sign the petition demanding action now from the DOJ and Congress before it's too late at StopDomesticTerror.com. That's StopDomesticTerror.com. Okay, we're going to find out why the Clean Coalition was the worst person in the world. But first, here's Desi Doyen with the headlines.
Brazil suffered a massive electrical blackout Tuesday that left an estimated 60 million people without power after the failure of overloaded transmission lines led to cascading failures across that nation's energy grid. Officials blamed the massive outage on a lightning storm and promised more investment in the nation's electrical infrastructure in advance of the 2016 Summer Olympics. In 2001, Brazil was forced into nationwide energy rationing when hydroelectric power output from dams was severely reduced during a prolonged drought.
Do they have the smart grids that we're talking about building out here with the stimulus money?
They do have an integrated grid, unlike the U.S., which has three regional grids, but their grid is not as advanced as the one we're proposing spending money on.
I see.
The Interior Department announced yesterday that the brown pelican has been taken off the endangered species list.
Yay!
One of the first species ever to receive protection. The brown pelican's return from the brink of extinction took nearly 40 years after the banning of the pesticide DDT, which caused pelicans' eggshells to become too thin.
I say yay about taking them off the endangered species list. Now, in the Obama administration, during the Bush administration, they would take the species off the list so they could go kill them, like the gray wolf up in
Montana.
Montana, yeah.
Also this week, the Environmental Protection Agency released a report on the health of the nation's freshwater lakes and reservoirs and found that the fish in half of our freshwater lakes are so contaminated with mercury that they are unsafe for human consumption. Mercury contamination in fish is caused by pollution from coal-fired power plants. Mercury is a potent neurotoxin that can cause damage to the nervous system and learning disabilities. The good news, though, the study shows that levels of PCBs have dropped since a ban was instituted in the 70s, and only 17% of the nation's lakes exceed acceptable levels. The EPA says the study highlights how widespread mercury pollution has become. Another study this week on BPA, that chemical that's used in most plastics, Consumer Reports has found traces of bisphenol A, that's BPA for short, leaching into canned foods. BPA is used as a can liner and acts as a synthetic estrogen that's linked to fetal abnormalities. The chemical industry has fought off any increased regulation of BPA, disputing the conclusions of these new studies, and although the Obama Food and Drug Administration has promised a review of BPA, U.S. consumers haven't generally clamored for action. But that may change. A new study in the British Journal of Human Reproduction now says high exposure to BPA is linked to erectile dysfunction.
Whoa, wait a minute. That's it. We've got to ban BPA. I was never in favor of it before. Now I'm outraged.
Yeah, I'm sure the right-wingers and conservatives will care about it now.
What will the teabaggers have to say about that, one wonders.
Finally, in honor of Veterans Day yesterday, the American Coalition for Clean Coal Electricity sent out an email claiming support from veterans groups such as Vote Vets and Operation Free, but those veterans groups have never supported coal. Their latest ruse earned them a Worst Person in the World award last night from MSNBC's Keith Olbermann.
Wow! Vote Vets and Operation Free believe in using the abundant domestic fuels we already have? No, actually, they don't. Vote Vets said it has never advocated the use of more carbon-based fuels, and Operation Free is a vets group dedicated to fighting climate change. So this sleazebag coal industry lobbying group simply lied about both veterans groups and pretended their opposition to this was support on Veterans Day.
In fact, Operation Free is sponsoring a nationwide bus tour of Iraq and Afghanistan veterans traveling around the country in support of clean energy legislation. You can get involved and help them out by going to OperationFree.net.
Unbelievable. Yes, they did. And this is the same group that sent out phony letters, remember, acting as if they were from
civil rights groups
urging Congress not to pass climate legislation. These guys, sorry to say it, are despicable. I want to welcome our new affiliate, KJFK, 1230 a.m. in Reno, Nevada. Delighted to have you guys on board. Welcome to the Green News Report. You can follow us on Twitter at Green News Report. Download our reports automatically at iTunes, or otherwise read much more at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report, Reno, Nevada.
Well, lonely mountains left and right.
Reno, Reno, Reno.
And then there's Reno, a blazing light. Nevada sage.
Reno, Reno, Reno.
And then there's Reno, center stage.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
You knew I was going to have to haul some of this out, didn't you? Listen to that. Can you imagine? Try to imagine. Go back inside your own skulls for a little bit. Remember the first time, after those years of listening to rock and roll on a 10 a.m., or maybe the local top 40 station, FM. After years of just hearing it that way, remember what it sounded like the first time that you heard it real and live. And remember what it did to you. Oh, I got chills down my side. Yeah, you know what? Parents do live vicariously through their children. And I got to tell you, I remember the first time I heard that. I remember the first time I was in a place where the music was loud enough to not only be audible, but physically tangible in the driving thump inside my body. And you don't forget that. And I'll tell you the truth. This bad. Thank you, is openly envious of his 13-year-old son. No doubt about it. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, hey, Bob, how are you doing?
Hey, what's up, Reverbo?
I was just listening to that. You were, of course, talking about one of my favorite points, which is what the hell is going on with our representative democracy?
Nothing good, as far as I can tell. And I got more, Reverbo.
Oh, I bet you do. Well, bring it on. What do you got?
Are you familiar? Well, you are a...
Do I need to be sitting down?
It wouldn't hurt.
All right, hold on a minute. Okay.
Okay. Got the bell?
Ready.
Okay. You're familiar with the inner tubes, right? I mean, you've been known to use them from time to time.
Yeah, it's like the back of a pickup truck or something like that.
No, it's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes.
Damn. All right, yeah, that's right. That's right.
You're down one bell.
I didn't ring it.
You should anti-ring it. Maybe we'll learn to do that after we've gotten to the moon.
All right.
So you remember the Patriot Act and national security letters and stuff like that?
Oh yeah.
And you remember how we had a fit about it during the 8 tormented, tortured, miserable, long, agonizing years of the George W. Bush regime?
I think we thought it was a bit intrusive.
Yes. Are you familiar with the stage direction exit screaming?
I've heard it.
Yes. Well, it turns out, remember those prosecutors, the ones that were dirty and manipulated by Karl Rove?
Oh, yeah.
They left little booby traps all over our government, our representative democracy, as referenced by you at the beginning of this call.
Like moles do.
Yes, yes, yes. And they left some of those, too.
Yeah.
Back in early January, before the... I'm sorry. I'm going to have to revise. But still, it's the same gang. Late January, after the inauguration, a woman by the name of Christina Clare of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, who is a system administrator for a server, received a grand jury subpoena from the Southern District of Indiana Federal Court. And this grand jury subpoena sought from her as a sysadmin for a number of websites. They wanted everything there was to be had. Here it is. Everything that there was to be had. Namely, in the words of the subpoena, all IP traffic to and from www.indymedia.us, web address, IP65.23.159.256, on the date of June 25th, 2008. Include IP addresses, times, and any other identifying information. 1. All customer or subscriber account information for any accounts registered to the following username or identification number. In other words, what they asked for was the IP address of every one of every single individual who went to indymedia.us's website. You know, thousands upon thousands of people on that given day, June the 25th, 2008.
And they had a subpoena, and they had a court order, and she was supposed to turn that over to them.
Oh, they didn't just have a subpoena, and no, they didn't have a court order. It was just a grand jury subpoena. You've heard the old saying that a prosecutor can get a grand jury to indict a ham sandwich?
Yes.
They can also get a grand jury to issue subpoenas for them, too.
Sorry.
I wasn't expecting that one.
I used to work for a district attorney. I should remember.
Okay. Well, here's the fun part. They didn't just want all of this information. They sent a letter along to, what was her name again? They sent a letter along to Christina Clare of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, telling her that having received the subpoena, she was by God forbidden to tell anybody she had.
Okay.
Now, granted, the prosecutor in a grand jury proceeding is sworn to secrecy. The grand jury itself is sworn to secrecy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you worked for a district attorney. This is fairly standard stuff.
Oh, yeah. It gets leaked. It sometimes will get leaked, but no, you are supposed to be quiet about it.
But the witness to a grand jury subpoena is de facto not gagged, nor is the recipient of a subpoena thereof not gagged. As a matter of law.
Why would they do that?
Because they're overreaching. Among other things, this is what was said in the gag order attendant upon the subpoena. You are not to disclose the existence of this request unless authorized by the assistant U.S. attorney. Any such disclosure would impede the investigation being conducted and thereby interfere with the enforcement of the law.
Well, doesn't that sound...
That sounds real threatening. The only problem is it don't exist in law. You know, those laws we keep talking about that we have to follow, you know, equal justice under law, we're a nation of laws and not of men, you know, that stuff.
What did she do?
She called, bless their little hearts, the Electronic Frontier Foundation.
Oh, okay.
She called the Electronic Frontier Foundation, who took a look at it and said, wow, this is stupid. And doing God's work, as it were, the EFF wrote a letter to the Assistant U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of Indiana, refusing to comply with the subpoena's demands. And if you go to the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and this is perhaps the important part of all this, if you go to EFF.org, they have something there called Best Practices for Online Service Providers. And among other things they suggest is that you not keep historic logs reflecting IP addresses. And that way the government can't get what you ain't got. But what's more important in all of this is that it goes forward in time. And the Obama administration, U.S. District Attorney for the Southern District of Indiana, by February 24th, apparently in charge, Stephen D. DeBroda was the assistant U.S. attorney working the case, and a note came on February, this is a quote, on February 24th I received a voicemail from Ms. Pryor in response to my letter. In that message, Ms. Pryor said that I was correct, that the subpoena did not compel Ms. Clare's silence, but that she would be seeking a court order, as she would confirm in a letter that day. In other words, the U.S. District Attorney for the Southern District of Indiana admitted that they had commanded silence with no legal basis to do so. Laws? We don't need no stinking laws.
What do we make of this?
What we make of this is that...
what's going on here?
Well, first of all, it's indiemedia.us, okay? This is non-mainstream media. This is a lot of citizen journalism.
Right.
And it is hated. Because that's where real journalism is happening now.
Sure.
Operating on your... operating on your initial query, what's happening to this representative democracy? The fact of the matter is, this case is a telling reminder of how the government uses its surveillance authority to keep tabs on all of our internet traffic. Now, whatever it was that they wanted, and it's not clear from this story, they specifically wanted the records from June the 25th, 2008.
The new folks wanted this.
Well, it started out with what I presume to be a Bush administration folks request. But even so, when would presume by February 24th to be Obama administration people responded, they said, no, we didn't have a right to gag you. But we're going to try to go get a court order that will.
I wonder what's so interesting about that day on that server, on that blog.
Well, here's my speculation. They saw something that they didn't like via their surveillance practices, but it wasn't enough to merit that court of star chamber thingy that they like to use that they even bypassed for the domestic spying. And so they got the grand jury to issue a subpoena for it. Only the subpoena won't stick. And what this tells you is that, a lot of people, when they send their emails around now, Reverbo, there's a little disclaimer at the bottom that says, you are advised that this email may have been read by the federal government without anyone's consent. You know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact of the matter is, it's true.
Oh, email is the last place you want to be sending any sensitive information.
But it is all being watched, and here's what's more, it's all still being watched.
Oh, indeed. Except it also tells you something else, that they either make a show of, where am I going with this? If they can see it all, why do they even need to alert me or you that they're watching us and they want something? They can just hack into it and...
But if they intend to use it in court, they've got a bit of an uphill climb.
They'll have to throw a few bones to the justice system.
Or, the notion of equal justice under law. But can you imagine that? They wanted a list of every single human being who had read the site that day.
God. Is that how...
And you know what? You don't consent, by virtue of using the series of tubes, you do not consent implicitly or explicitly to be surveilled upon. You simply do not.
Yeah, well, we're got a war on terror going on here, Keith. Still do, don't we?
9/11.
I don't know what we have agreed to or not, if you really want to know. Is that how cookies work? So if I would have gone to that site that day, that their computer would have hooked up with my computer and there would be a little record of that.
And it would, their server would say we were visited by boom, 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 boom.
Right.
And so anybody running a website should know not to keep a log of traffic.
Well, what do they do? What do they just destroy it every day? How do you know how many hits you get and all that kind of
stuff?
Yeah,
it's just a clear account. Well, I mean, there's a difference, and I think Ben Birch would probably be a much better person to ask about this, but You know, there's a difference between having some sub-process running that says 1, little 2, little 3, little visitors, 4, little 5, little 6, little visitors, 7, little 8, little 9, little visitors, 10 little visitors more. There's a difference between that and logging that visitor 1 came from Poughkeepsie, visitor 2 came from Peoria, and because, you know, every IP address is unique.
Oh, yeah. I got my unique one. Well, let them, you know, you're in that fortified porn bunker there, but I'm
No, we're not. We found out by virtue of the diligent efforts of Peter Godbold, we found out a long time ago that we are being watched.
Yeah, well, Cheney's, you know, he's direct. They're not all those laser beams. The microwave beams are heading coming in there.
Oh, yeah. It's probably what's changed my vision. Not staring. It probably has nothing to do with staring at a computer monitor for 18 hours a day for the last 5 years.
Have you ever, just for fun or for some reason, maybe it was an email that someone said they sent you and you didn't get, or you didn't get it for a couple of days. For some reason, it was hung up in those inner tubes, and you went in there and tried to find where it went, and you hit the let me see more button on the email.
Yes.
Isn't that amazing?
Oh, it's fascinating. It's every bit as fascinating as checking what are called hops. As data packets go from one server to another server to another server to another server, literally, that's why it's the World Wide Web. It's a series of tubes. You don't just put the data on a big truck and send an internet, and the big truck goes straight to the other internet. We're using Senator Stevens' language now. It's a series of tubes, and one tube connects to another tube, connects to another tube, and, you know, who knows? I mean, this conversation right now may well have just passed through, for all we know, the Bay of Fundy.
Oh, God. It makes as many stops as your mortgage does.
Yeah, yes, yeah.
Just a little joke there.
Yeah.
But, it does. I mean, it stops at Burger King. I couldn't believe how many places an email goes before it gets to me. Nor do I quite understand why, except the series of tubes explanation. It's good enough. If it's good enough for the senator, it's good enough for me.
Hear. But there's that, and then there's another one of those what's happening to our representative democracy things.
Oh, God, not another one.
I got two. Are you familiar with, of course you're familiar with the Environmental Protection Agency.
Yes, I am.
Well, they've got a couple of lawyers out in the San Francisco regional office who have been there for like 20 years, named Lori Williams and Alan Zabel. They're enforcement attorneys and operating as private citizens, mind you, not as, you know, this is the holy writ of the EPA, but just as private citizens. They released a video relating to the energy policy bills sort of tracking their way through Congress. And I really want to run this audio this evening, and I would love to have your thoughts. They put this video up called The Huge Mistake. And they put it up on, of course, YouTube. And they received a letter as of like the 8th of November that demanded that they, remove your climate change video from YouTube by the close of business on Friday, November 6th, 2009. Edit your YouTube video by, one, removing the language starting at 1:06. Our opinions are based on more than 20 years each working as attorneys for the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency in the San Francisco Regional Office. Two, removing the images of EPA's building starting at 1:06. And then down to five, remove the language starting at 6:30. In my work at EPA, I've been overseeing California's cap and trade and offset programs for more than 20 years. All future requests for approval of an outside writing activity must be accompanied by a draft of the document that is the subject of the approval request. That's going to make it just hell for people at the EPA sending out their Christmas cards, isn't it?
It will. And this was signed by the YouTube police, essentially?
No, this was signed by the Environmental Protection Agency.
Okay.
Now, you want to hear what all, you want to hear about what all the carrying on's about?
Indeed I do.
Well, what this turns out to be is these folks seem to think that cap and trade is a sham. The Big Mistake by Laurie Williams and Alan Zabel.
Congress is about to make a huge mistake on climate change. We have the greatest respect for Congress and the President, but the climate bill they are currently supporting is fatally flawed. The bill is called the American Clean Energy and Security Act, or Waxman-Markey, sponsors of the House bill for short.
This climate bill narrowly passed the House in June, and a similar bill is likely to reach the Senate in September. The push to launch this climate bill reminds us of the ill-fated launch of the Space Shuttle Challenger. The people responsible for the Challenger launch refused to listen to the rocket designers with the experience to know the shuttle was fatally flawed. This failure to listen resulted in tragedy.
We are speaking out because our political leaders are getting bad advice and are not listening to those who understand the flaws of the climate bill. We are speaking out as parents, citizens, a married couple, and attorneys.
Our opinions are based on more than 20 years each, working as attorneys at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency in the San Francisco Regional Office. However, nothing in this video is intended to represent the views of EPA or the Obama administration.
Scientists are convinced that further delay in cutting greenhouse gases means an unacceptable risk of climate catastrophe. U.S. military analysts see the potential for major threats to national security from climate change during the next 20 to 30 years. This video provides an overview of why Congress is getting it wrong and how they could be getting it right in three segments we call The Big Lie, The Big Ripoff, and The Real Solution.
The climate bill currently before Congress relies on a cap-and-trade approach. So what is cap-and-trade? Cap-and-trade means facilities cut their emissions each year until the goal is achieved. Total pollution is capped. If some facilities have more trouble cutting their emissions than others, they can trade by buying more permits to pollute. The big lie is that EPA's experience with cap-and-trade in the acid rain program proved that cap-and-trade will work for climate change. While cap-and-trade worked fairly well in the acid rain program, the needed changes there were relatively easy tweaks to existing coal-fired power plants. Most acid rain reductions came from switching to lower sulfur coal. Some facilities added pollution scrubbers, but the solutions involved little new infrastructure and almost no innovation.
In contrast, climate change can't be solved by tweaks to existing facilities. It requires cutting fossil fuel emissions to the atmosphere, which are the main cause of climate change. It requires an energy revolution through investments in building new clean energy facilities, such as wind, geothermal, and solar. And, if proven safe and effective, advanced designs of nuclear power and underground sequestration of fossil fuel emissions. But energy from the uncontrolled use of fossil fuels is cheap, and clean energy remains expensive. Investors will not risk their money unless they know clean energy will become cost competitive with uncontrolled fossil fuels within a known time frame. Cap and trade will not create confidence that clean energy will become profitable, and so it will not ignite the huge shift in investment needed to begin the clean energy revolution. Cap and trade for climate change has been tried in Europe. It produced harmful volatility in energy prices and few greenhouse gas reductions. It raised energy prices for consumers and made billions in windfall profits for utilities.
Even the economists who came up with the cap-and-trade idea don't believe it's an appropriate tool for addressing climate change. In addition, Congress...
I mean, Reverbo, and this goes on, and I'll probably play it later in the program, but do you hear any... I didn't hear any strains of the Internationale or anyone screaming, you know, a los barricados, or you know, what? The workers of the world unite, you have nothing to lose but your carbon?
I heard a big disclaimer in the beginning of it, too.
So this is the Obama, you know, this is not like there are leftovers at the EPA from the Bush administration who are operating on a heavy, in some heavy-handed fashion. This is the Obama administration EPA, and the reason I wanted to get to this tonight is that close of business for the EPA regional office in San Francisco is about 3 minutes ago. Now
that was the deadline to get that thing edited?
Edited or off the air? Now I'm really worried about these two folks, even though they're lawyers. They've apparently worked hard in their careers and tried to do a good job with what they've done, but by virtue of criticizing cap and trade, cap and trade doesn't bother me for the same reason that it bothers Don Blankenship or any of the other members of the coal mob. Cap and trade bothers me because it creates another one of these. What was it we were talking about last week? Naked short selling?
Oh, yeah.
Well, it creates an opportunity to do that kind of the Wall Street pseudo investment flim flam. And they do point toward a real solution. And I guess that's not okay with the Obama administration.
It's not as if there's a shortage of criticism. It's that if these two would just quit criticizing us, we'd eliminate all the criticism. They get criticism coming down on them 24/7. What's the big deal about this?
Right. And this kind of blows me away. Because they actually do propose a realistic, workable scenario. And, what a bone they threw. And, if scientifically feasible, the sequestration of carbon-based emissions. And, if feasible, nuclear power.
I heard that.
Now, I have reason to believe that, for instance, we're not going to get any new nuclear power plants because there are no investment banks out there that are willing to lend the money for building them. And that while we're going to throw a lot of corporate welfare at carbon capture and storage, there's nobody out there willing to invest in the technology because it is already a known fact that the technology is bogus. So, I assume that if I know this, a lot of other people know it too. Because the trickle-down economics, Reverbo, we've also got trickle-down information. And by God, by the time it gets to me, loudmouth hillbilly with a microphone in the middle of Appalachia, you can pretty well guess that it's been around the block a couple of times, through the tubes.
Is that what you think they had in mind for this, that this would, ignite the new green energy revolution somehow?
Well, no. What I think is bothering the EPA and the Obama administration is that they have taken the position that they got to get something, and they got to get this Waxman-Markey giveaway bill, this thing loaded with coal corporate welfare and so forth, that they got to get it passed, and they got to get it passed in the Senate, something, anything. I heard that from in regard to both health care and climate change legislation. I heard Bill Clinton in Pittsburgh at Netroots Nation say that very thing. It doesn't matter if it's perfect. You got to get something passed. And I think that is the running conventional wisdom. Underlying all of this, or overarching it, whichever way you prefer, is the notion that we have two instances here now just within the scope of this conversation that indicates pretty broadly, no, we've got three instances because we've also got the fact that we're going to continue to have kangaroo court show trials for people who've never been charged with a crime. We've got three instances of the Obama administration saying, work for Bush. And just continuing previous policy.
I just wish if they decided to copy the master, they would just copy his heavy-handed approach to ramming legislation down the other side's throat. They don't seem to be doing that, though.
Yeah, not so much. You know, the thing, look, the Bush administration didn't hesitate in the least. There was all kinds of legislation that everybody hated, and they passed it anyway.
Oh, you bet.
You know, look at Medicare Part D, the single largest piece of corporate welfare giveaway in the history of this country, quite possibly.
So far, we haven't passed that Health Care Reform Act yet.
Right. With all of its, yeah.
That was, hey, well, if you, I don't know, you might as well add that to the list, but you could have four big ones for tonight. I mean, after that fiasco, after the fiasco that whole health care reform thing is just so just a crock. I mean, it just goes, I think I wrote to you something like, I mean, it's never been more clear how much our laws are for sale anymore.
Or how screwed we are.
Pretty much. I mean, if you're going to use, what, should we use 1776 as the date of our birth here?
Yeah.
I mean, we as a little democratic experiment, we are on the brink, folks. I mean, do you agree or not agree that the 2008 election was a clear call to action? I'll answer for you. Yes, it was.
Yeah. Yes, yes, we have a winner.
Yeah, instead, what's happening? What's happening here?
We've got vacillation. We've got backtracking. We have got fear-induced pants wetting on the part of Harry Reid.
Oh God. Well, what's the point? I mean, why even this idea of like passing anything is better than nothing? Well, why not just save time and just go on vacation and do nothing? I mean, it's just I don't even understand the point of the debate of any of this. It's like if you don't do the in healthcare, the Medicare for All model is the one you wanted. So if that's taken out of the program right away, then let's just save time and go on to the next thing.
Well, and I think
what's the point of even doing it?
I think the Stupak Pitts amendment is the perfect poster child for this. Here's a piece of legislation that was co-authored and jointly introduced, the Stupak Pitts amendment, by Bart Stupak, the C Streeter.
I love that.
Oh, you know, I could just keep saying it. I mean, you want to make fun of it, but you realize that it stands on its own.
It doesn't need a thing.
I mean, it sounds like some Eastern European version of stupid.
Oh yeah. Well, actually, what could make it better is if it was a little below the Mason-Dixon line, and it could be Billy or Jimmy or Bobby Stupak. But I'll let you.
Bobby Lee Stupak.
Yeah. That's a combination
that's
just frightening, of course.
But anyway, you know, this amendment was co-authored by a Republican and a Democrat, and they're both C-Streeters, and they're both, you know, hardcore. They both got that weird hardcore fascination with a woman's insides that are strangely reminiscent of the Eric Idle's piece from Monty Python. Does your wife? Does she go? Eh? Does she?
Hey, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Winks as good as, not just as good as a wink to a blind man. Say no more. And you remember that skit? And I'm not ruining this for anybody because everybody's seen it or heard it. The skit ends with the Eric Idle character saying, "And you've had sex, right? Right? Say no more. Not as good as a wink to a blind man. Know what I mean? Hey." And I think it's one of the Terrys, who looks at him and says, "Why, yes, we have." And then just deadpan, Eric Idle says, "What's it like?" And that's these C Street right wing, sexually fascinated, frustrated, so-called conservative Democrats. Yeah, they're absolutely fascinated with women's insides because I think you know, the lights have always been off. They don't know what it looks like. They don't know what's connected to which. They still think that babies come from under cabbage leaves. Yeah, I don't know. But here you've got this piece of legislation, this amendment, and we know beforehand that no Republicans are going to vote for it. But it's jointly offered by a Republican and a Democrat. And then it is voted for by Democrats. It's voted for by there were 63 Democrats who voted for it, and and only 41 who wound up voting for the bill.
It's absurd. It's almost like the fix is in. I mean, there's people who just think this is going to just sink the whole thing.
Well, it's it's clear, but it's clear from the way that vote went that this was pure manipulation of process. You know, if you're a Democrat and you vote for this damn thing, then you are duty-bound to vote for the legislation with the majority. But 20-some-odd of them didn't.
Yeah, I know.
Arter Davis, Alabama's answer to Barack Obama, voted against the health care reform bill.
That was amazing.
You know, Parker Griffith from Alabama's 5th District, a physician who is a Democrat, voted against the health care bill. And Nancy Pelosi let this all happen. You know, it's like the dog and pony show that they put on last week on, what was it, Thursday or Friday night. And the Repiglicans just sat there and escort, you know, Nancy Pelosi's trying to shove this here 950-pound dead fish down Marcus' throat. Pardon me, I'm drunk. You know, Paul Brown from Georgia who, I heard it. I sat here, Reverbo, and I heard it. Paul Brown said, anybody can go to the emergency room that needs to. I mean, he was drunk down to the seamed ends of his socks. And the Democrats were nowhere to be found. All they had to do was go in and say, I object, or any of that kind of stuff. And that whole dog and pony show would have ground to a halt. But we let them have C-SPAN time there to create a phony debate that they then turned around and YouTubed to get the Bobby Lee Stupaks all worked up.
This one is too upsetting. This one makes no sense to me at all. This one needed, I don't know, the word comes to mind is leadership. You know, this wasn't gonna be easy. And it's like the writing was on the wall from the get-go. It was just a farce from the start. That's what I say. I don't even know why they waste their time with this stuff. Put a show on like this. Who cares about it now? I bet the thing will sink because of that Stupak amendment.
Or like I said, and again, this is important, watch who the House conferees are if something comes out of the Senate. Because this was just a House bill.
Yeah, that's true.
But if there's something, anything, called a health care bill that comes out of the Senate that isn't killed by Joe Lieberman because he apparently wields, Thor-like power.
Superhero power, yeah.
You know, I guess he's got the Joe-mentum on this one. But if he lets anything out of the Senate, then it has to go to a conference committee. And you mark my words, if Bart Stupak is on that conference committee, then yeah, you know, from the minute you see his name, the fix is in.
I'm telling you, we're on the brink. We don't need any more examples. I mean, I've heard enough tonight. I came up with a little something here. If we're going to illustrate this, as this, you know, yes, the United States is disease-ridden at this point. We are corroded. And we need a cure for this, you know? But guess what, folks? We ain't got any national health care. And the insurance companies aren't going to cover the operation we need because they'll say that corruption is a pre-existing condition.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, give yourself another one.
Oh, Lord.
No, they may be cheap tonight with that kind of stuff.
If any country needed a, and I don't even want to say what it is, this country does. I can't.
Yeah, I just got a comment from News Ninja Gene saying, oh, God, Joe Lieberman in a cape and tights. Somebody gouge out my eyes.
Oh, my word. Hey, really quick, remember when the whole system of public schools was set up?
Well, I mean, I wasn't there.
Of course not. I mean, had it been in the last, say, was it very early on in the country's existence, or was it more of a, you know, after the Civil War kind of thing?
Well, actually, you live in a place where that question is very important. Because the idea of public education was posited by Jefferson, but it was only expanded upon, among other things, with the creation of that little institution there in Chapel Hill. Because while the University of Virginia was the University of Virginia, it wasn't just open to anybody. And William and Mary certainly wasn't, and Harvard certainly wasn't. The University of North Carolina, as I understand it, is the first public university.
Really?
And they're very, very proud of that fact.
I would be, too. Where I was going with this was that I started to think about, again, the role of government. And when government gets involved in the big stuff, right, the everybody stuff, not just the discretionary stuff, leave that alone. I don't give a damn. You want to buy 5 yachts, you go right ahead. I just mean if all our boats are leaking, just let's fix them. Just slap them together, put some paint on, let's fix them. You want to spend more money on a nicer finish, that's your business. So I was thinking, what is the big problem here with this, with Medicare for All? What is the objection to this whole thing? And I started to think about public schools. And then contrasting that with, I don't know, don't we have a vigorous private and parochial school system as well in this country?
Oh, that got further invigorated by the Civil Rights Act and Brown versus Board of Education.
And isn't that, so I like that, vigorous and invigorated. I'm going to have to go over here, remember that.
Oh, thank
you.
Of course that's
where it comes from. But you know, what is, so... If you want to just, public school, as I recall, is mostly based on property taxes. We kind of eat those. People don't pay a whole hell of a lot of attention to that. And if you get, whether or not you even have kids, we, part of the social contract is we have a public school system, or you want to spend thousands and thousands of dollars for whatever reason, you don't need a reason. We have a fine series of private and parochial schools available in this country for those of you who wish to spend the money. Is all that not true?
Yeah, every last bit of it.
Okay, so you see where I'm going with this?
I do.
I don't get it. What is the objection? Those two entities seem to coexist together just fine. I mean, yes, it's true that there are these complete shit-the-brain, you know, libertarian types who constantly bitch, well, I don't have kids, so I shouldn't have to pay for public schools.
And you know, I mean...
property or, you know, whatever. I don't drive a car, so I shouldn't have to pay for public highways. No, it's bulldoze crap. But that's too bad. You just, in my...
Right, and the counter-argument is the same in both instances. You may not drive on the public roads, but the public roads are certainly driven on by the people who feed your dead ass.
Yeah, you're not...
You know, you don't have children in the public schools, but the children in the public schools will grow up to be the people who make it possible for you to keep breathing, living, eating, staying warm in the winter and cool in the summer, all of that. So, yes, it is a part of the public, it is a part of the social contract, it is a part of the social fabric of this country. Yet, shut up and pay your taxes.
Now, I was wondering, you know, when the public school system was devised, just how many Republicans voted against it. It may have been devised earlier on at a time when the Republicans hadn't quite reached that level of insanity and arch conservatism that they have shown they've developed, you know, since what, the Gilded Age, I guess. But yeah, there's people who complain who try to talk, articulate these arguments that they shouldn't, hey, we're not, I'm not going to ever burn down, so I'm not paying for the fire department. You need one, you just pay for one.
Right, or some woman saying,
you know, I love Jesus with all my heart. I'm never going to get pregnant that I don't want to be, so I don't need no insurance. What covers no abortion?
There you go.
That's
not even worth spending 5 minutes with these people. I mean, it's next.
That would be Betty Lou Stupak, by the way.
I thought it was Charlene. No, it was Betty Lou?
Yeah. Charlene Jane Stupak. They look a lot alike.
God, I wonder what her maiden name was before she married married a senator. Senator Stupak. You can't make that up.
Yeah, you can just imagine the nuptials, you know, where they turn around, ladies and gentlemen, I present to you Mr. and Mrs. Bart Stupak, when all of a sudden the bride turns around and says, wait a minute! I'm going to stay McGillicuddy, okay?
Everybody seems to just be happy to interpret, you know, America in every damn wrong way they possibly can. You just mentioned the Christians. Interpreting it the wrong way. The libertarians interpret it the wrong way. Nobody seems to interpret it the right way. And if they did, like I say, we have that big disclaimer, if, you know, this isn't happening for you, please see Constitution for details.
Yeah, right.
If you just do that, then you would see that Medicare for All fits perfectly.
Promote the general welfare.
Yes, with what this country is all about. Now, again, it's nothing fancy. You know, there's plenty of room to, you know, if you want to, like I said, if you want that third eye grafted onto your butt, well, you just go right ahead and, you know, head down to, you go to that special clinic and...
Yeah, I want a baby's head growing out of my head.
Well,
baby's arm. I want a baby's arm.
But, I mean, that's what public schools are. They're not Harvard, and they're not supposed to be.
Well, you want to hear a different interpretation of America?
Although you can get fine education at public school. Yes, I do.
This is an email I got from a buddy, Scott, in Sweden. And once again, you've opened the door for me to share it, and I really want to. After some introductory remarks advising me to perhaps take a pass on the rotten Swedish fish, the surströmming, which I'm not taking a pass on because of my eyes and blood pressure. No, I'm not taking a pass. No, that's still a party that's planned. He said, I enjoyed, as usual, your conversation with Sandra from a couple of nights ago. The Horn is Brilliant Radio. That something both of you agreed on saddened me, yet I think you were both right. And I think you're touching on this as well, Reverbo. Neither of you wants the government to mandate a health insurance program, but of course, as you both later realized, what we really want is exactly a mandated plan, namely universal single-payer health care coverage. Clearly the American citizen has reason to feel despair about being represented and their interests prioritized. And, you know, that's the whole point. I want single-payer health care. I do not want some sort of mandate that I further enrich the insurance industry, which I am of the personal opinion, and I think a well-grounded one, that it is inherently evil. So that's me editorializing. Scott goes on, and I think you're going to be interested in this take on the United States, Reverbo. The U.S. The U.S. Healthcare debate has my fellow Swedes stunned. People are just shaking their heads. America is being written off here as an increasingly failing state. In a way, this may be good for us in the EU as we gain confidence that our way can stand on its own, and the good old U.S., which was such a good friend after World War II, had become at first arrogant but is now sclerotic. Many here think it's time to give the old codger his gold watch and tuck him into a retirement home with many thanks for past services rendered, but no thanks for any additional services. America has gone from the friend to be emulated to the with friends like these who needs them category. He goes on and says, you told your story about going to the eye doc who looked at your insurance coverage and gave you the bum's rush. So even with some sort of coverage, which puts you in a middle caste above those without, but under those with lots of money, you're still being clearly told where your place is in society. To wit, you are in essence no worthier to society than your ability to pay. Effing barbaric. And health care is only one of many spheres of life in the U.S. for which this is true. And then Scott offers this this personal observation. He says, 2 years ago, my retina tore suddenly late on one Friday. The doc said there was a 72-hour period before the damage needed to be treated, so they booked me for Monday morning. I paid my $30 for a hospital outpatient visit, and they tried laser fusing of the retina tear, and I went back a week later to assess the outcome. Not good enough, so they tried again. After the third time, they said my retina was apparently too thin for this technique, so they had me stay two nights for bagging my eye socket in a tight nylon pocket to press the retina in place. It's still there. And then there were a few post-op checkups. All this was on that same $30 initial fee. In that same eye hospital were patients from the company boardrooms to an immigrant Iraqi car mechanic. This is equality, in my honest opinion. A system that all pay into according to their ability, read progressive income tax system, and each receives according to need, read all get the same high-quality care. Naturally, we all either paid in advance or afterwards as part of our regular tax rates. No absurd change in future rates because of our new medical conditions, and no rejection due to past medical condition. Try pulling that stunt here, and there would be a revolt. It's about dignity, Scott says. The U.S. system denies its citizens basic dignity and in its place substitutes ability to pay. So no wonder both you and Sandra worry about what the Senate and House are going to do and whether the Prez is on your side or not. It's a rational concern, and that is both a tragedy and a farce. Here we expect and we get representation, and our needs are respectfully addressed. They don't dare not. I understand why Americans aren't taking it to the street, because the sad truth is most simply feel beaten. But I should talk. I emigrated and became a citizen here instead. Short of advancing glaciers wiping the country off the map, I cannot imagine why I would ever even consider returning to the U.S., and that, for me, is a sad thing. Sorry about the downbeat conclusion. My only hope now is that should the U.S. hit bottom, the EU will do its version of the Marshall Plan for the U.S., providing we get to rewrite the legal code to keep the U.S. from its habitual recidivism. There's one for you. The poetic justice of imposing such terms for aid would not be lost to many. And then this. Take care, my fellow hornies. I wish I could spirit you all out of there. You deserve better than you are getting.
Wow. I do love the concept that we do fall off the wagon all the time here, don't we? The big speeches and...
Well, you're the one... You're the one, and we can substitute a word. I'll be sober. Yes, I'll be sober just as soon as I am able.
Yeah.
We don't fall off the wagon so much as we occasionally climb onto it.
Well, I just wish they quit acting like they're climbing up there, because they have no intention of remaining there. You know, we laugh. We laugh about the, what was it? The one of the great things about America is, the requiring next to nothing. You tolerate almost everything. Except that's not funny anymore, because we had better start requiring some things. We had better start playing fair with people. Although I'm beginning to think that Scott is right. I mean, I'm just so fed up at this point. You just want to just throw in the towel and say the hell with it. Either that or just screw it. Let's just start over.
And Marty points out...
That's what you said. I don't mean to interrupt, You were going on about that, how the entire system is corrupt and messed up, and it's impossible to fix. That's never going to happen. And it's easier for people to just throw in the towel and think, look, I have no access to my government anymore.
You remember those great posters that they used to sell in Kmart and the local head shop and stuff back in the 70s, Reverbo? There was one that was called The Last Great Act of Defiance, and it was a mouse standing on the ground flipping a bird, flipping off an eagle that was coming down at him, with his talons bared.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, there was another one that just wound up on more dormitory walls than I can remember that showed it was a mock-up of the driving of the Golden Spike, where the Eastern Railroad met the Western Railroad and the Continental Connection.
Mm-hmm.
Only the left-hand side rail of the Western Railroad was meeting the left-hand side rail of the Eastern Railroad, leaving them offset by a rail. And, you know, it was that whole, you know, sort of, what, sepia-tinted and men in bowler hats and no color. And then the caption underneath was just, oh, shit. Well, that's where we are. We are increasingly looking at an America that doesn't match up anymore, that doesn't fit, where the stick has been put in the spokes of the Rube Goldberg device, and it's just all collapsed, and all we're left to do is look at the mess, and you know, anyone even somebody who begins to think that they have the power to fix something, it is not unacceptable for them to say, at the beginning of the gotta fix it phase, oh shit.
I had big expectations this time. Now it's true that I'm a sucker for a well-crafted sentence. And, you know, but that goes back to the beginning of it. Was this not, or were we not on the brink? Was this not a call to action? If any election was in my lifetime, this sure as hell was. I mean, you know, I realize that what a mess that we're in, and the deficit is just so high that it almost makes reform impossible. I know all that. But to just, I mean, you should have come out, you should have come to that poker game, I mean, with aces down your boots, man. You should have come ready to play. And I don't, you know, don't send Harry Reid in the ring. The whole thing just doesn't make any sense to me anymore. And, but of course, now, be careful, Bob, before I let you go. Be careful with the Rube Goldberg. It's easy to go the Rube Goldberg route and, you know, just act like the whole thing just sprung and it's all over the place. All this was by design. Let's not ever forget that.
Oh, without a doubt. And I'm also at peril by using that reference. Simply by virtue of the fact that the Repiglicans are doing everything in their power to make healthcare look like a Rube Goldberg device. That Friday night or Thursday night or whatever the hell it was, when they were sitting there with the, you know, well, here's the healthcare bill, and they'd pick up, you know, two copied reams of copier paper and with a loud boom on the desk. Oh, wait, that's only a third of it. Boom. Oh, here's the rest of it. Boom. And there's 39 more pages that we ain't got because Speaker Pelosi won't let us see them. And then they've got their Glenn Beck flow charts that make it look like a Rube Goldberg device. And you know what? But the fact is, Reverbo, once you factor in all this business about how we're going to fund exchanges, but only as long as women who need to have reproductive health care issues taken care of, taken out of it, then it takes on some Rube Goldberg qualities, doesn't it? When in fact, if you want the non-Rube, getting lost in myself here, if you want the non-Rube Goldberg device, if you want the hammer instead of the room full of machinery that ultimately hammers a nail, then isn't, and simple is elegant and beautiful and effective, then isn't that answer Medicare for all? Isn't that HR 676? Isn't that universal single-payer health care?
Of course it is. Yeah, it's more than tempting to look at all this and just go, what kind of fools, what is this demonry? What kind of fools would come up with this? Well, very intentional fools.
People who aren't fools at all.
No, they're not fools at all. It's like when people made the mistake of pretending George Bush was an idiot. George Bush wasn't an idiot. George Bush was just a tool. Here's a headline I'm going to leave you with. This is from Fire Dog Wake. This is tremendous. George W. Bush apparently, unironically, to unveil Public Policy Institute today at SMU. is dated November 12th. You know, that's the only school that was set up that presidential.
Oh, I remember the long and brutal fight, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, this real quick quote. In a speech at Southern Methodist University, home of his future library and museum, he's going to have a museum, the former president will kick off the new George W. Bush Institute as a forum for study and advocacy in four main areas. I'm going to try to get through these without laughing. Education, global health, human freedom, and economic growth.
Well, you made it. I didn't. The first one was enough to do me in.
Remember, if anyone in history is synonymous with those four things, it's certainly George W. Bush.
You know what, though? I want one of the first George W. Bush Public Policy Institute fellowships.
Oh, God. I want all the knickknacks we can get our hands on about this guy. Just for comedy routines forever.
You know, and I want one of those hand-painted pillars that says "Greetings from the George W. Bush Institute for Public Policy at Siler's Swamp" on it too.
Yeah, he's all funny now, isn't he? See, this is the danger. None of this is funny.
This isn't funny. This is farce.
Yeah, it's farce. Any chance of Rocky Raccoon? Any chance at all?
Let me see what I can do.
Well, I really enjoyed this conversation. Have a good weekend. Hope your eye is better.
It's sitting here and feels like something. You know what it feels like when you blow out a match and then you touch your skin with it?
Uh-huh.
That's what it feels like in the corner of my eye right now. Pleasant it ain't, but I'm going to see somebody who will not treat me like human garbage. And with any...
I've had a job for 2 years, and I've had health insurance. Because what they call you when you do show up at the emergency room and need them and you don't have health insurance, they call you a bum. So, but Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina just sent me a little note saying that they were going up $20 a month. And which basically comes out to an extra month out of my checkbook. And some people would think, you know, I'm paying about, it doesn't matter, people know this. I'm fairly healthy, and I'm paying about $300 a month for private health insurance. And you think, some people think, well, shit, that's no big deal. You know, if you have anything wrong with you, you could pay $900 a month. You could be paying $1,200 a month. You have a family. Christ, you could be going broke doing this. Well, that's all true. But in the context of Sweden, in the context of France, in the context of these other countries that have figured it out, I'm getting screwed.
Yeah, that $30, that what you're paying, that $300 a month, even when you don't get treatment, that's Scott's major eye surgery 10 times a month.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sympathetic to people that are getting totally hosed by the insurance companies, and I guess I'm glad I'm not, but good Lord. I mean, these countries that, you know, when you have, you can also go to college for free in these countries, by the way, which I don't know, but as far as I knew, that kind of helped the overall productivity of your population. You can all live minimum wage in some of these countries. It's like $15-16. And you think, oh, no, that's all relative, of course. They're paying like 50%, you know, income taxes. Yeah, it gets all relative until you think, well, let's see. Minimum wage over there is $15 an hour. They get universal medical care, and their tax rate is 50%. So when it's all done, they're making $7.50 an hour, and they don't have to worry about losing their job and losing their health care, and they have a basic social safety net, and they don't have to, you know, worry about moving into their mom's basement when they're 49 years old, and it still comes out to $7.50 an hour working at McDonald's. Well, over here, the minimum wage is $6.50 an hour, and we don't have anything. We got nothing.
Fuck this.
I mean, you figure it out. You do the math. big deal, you know. And I'll tell you, they would, none of those people, no one would trade what they had for our taxes. Not a damn one of them. Listen
to Scott.
He won't.
No, I would think that there is something wrong with him if he would. No offense, but
yeah, I mean, this is so clear to me. I don't know why. Well, it's because our system is just corrupt and corroded.
Well, did you? And I know I got to let you off, but did you? The comment from that right winger the other day where he said, "Now wait a minute, you want to eliminate these here pre-existing conditions? You mean to tell me that you want to let a feller who's turned down insurance all his life and ain't paid for it, you want to let him turn up to be 49 years old and suddenly need a new liver because he's drank like a fish and we all got to pay for it, and the insurance companies can't say no, he's damn drunk?"
These people need to be put in the stockade. We need to bring
the
stockade back.
That's Acme Insurance Company CEO, Joe Bob Stupak.
What about the word "everybody" do you not understand? What about the word "we" don't you get? Not you, obviously.
No. I know you're me.
We always have to do that.
Well, they've got some sort of weird super double secret probation subjunctive that when it says "we," it means we, us, who've got something and are hanging on to it for dear life and damn well don't want any of you who don't have any of it to have what we got, close paren, the people.
Well, the people to them are,
I mean, it's a pronoun from hell.
Somehow or other, the people ended up being, you're not the people unless you're white and Christian and male.
Well, listen, let's remember that we the people meant that when the Constitution was written.
You know what?
We're just lucky that the originalists, you know, the rats on the court, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, haven't found a way to drag Anthony Kennedy into the mix and declared that we the people and common welfare, because it's we the people in order to secure blah blah blah, and so provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure for us and our posterity the blessings of liberty, that kind of thing. I'm getting it all wrong. I know it. But then again, I'm not the leader of the Republican Party either, so you know, and I don't have a tanning bed tan that makes me look like a pumpkin. We're lucky that the rats have not come out and said, "We are constitutional originalists. We interpret the Constitution in the meaning of it, in the manner of its original meaning, and henceforward, common welfare will mean the common welfare of white, male, landowning persons."
I'm waiting for that. That seems to be where we're going. We're heading.
I mean, that's the original meaning, isn't it?
Pretty much.
I mean, Jesus, even the vote didn't mean the women folk until what, 1919? And for all intents and purposes, vote didn't mean people less than ivory soap white until 1964.
I don't think down in South Carolina, the women meant the women until about 1970. But that's another. That's why they're the most embarrassing state in
the country. And by the way, before we go, the reading assignment for you and everybody else: go read Mark Morford, one of his latest ones, over at sfgate.com. He proposes something called the Lethal Injection College Tuition Program.
I don't like it.
Oh, I read it. It just had, you know, yeah. I almost read it on the air tonight.
Website again?
sfgate.com. Just look up Mark Morford, Morford. Yeah, sharpest liberal columnist in the country today, period, bar none.
It's so wonderful how so completely brainwashed and deluded the Republican base is. Yeah, it's true that they are white and they're Christian and they're mostly men. But let's not forget that there's, you know, words for these. I don't like going here, but I'm going to. Some people have used the term trailer trash or white trash, and I always get a big kick out of how those people just, well, they have no trouble climbing on board, you know, with their conservative talking points, and you just think, hey, boys, you know, you're not who they're talking about either. You don't count either. You're not going to get that liver transplant either, there, Bubba. But I guess they don't. They haven't figured that out yet.
No. And you mentioned South Carolina, which is, give yourself a bell for that.
Head over to the bell, Art.
Okay, South Carolina. And using that is what reminded me of Mark Morford, and this is just a tease to encourage people to go and read this. This is from the middle of the column. In 2008, the United States executed about 30 males all by lethal injection, unless they lived in South Carolina, in which case it was electrocution preceded by being forced to stare at 2 full weeks at a poster of Lindsey Graham. Horrible.
That's true, too. I'll do it.
That ought to light you up. Reverbo, great conversation, and have a wonderful weekend.
Okay, you too.
All right, later.
Make it personal. Bye-bye.
Bye. Make it personal. And just a little snippet here before we go to a couple of the closing phone calls of the evening. By request, because we do requests on this program for Reverbo.
Now, somewhere in the Black Mountain Hills of Dakota, there lived a young boy named Rocky Raccoon. And one day, his woman ran off with another guy, hit young Rocky in the eye. Rocky didn't like that. He said, I'm going to get that boy. So one day he walked into town, booked himself a room in the local saloon. Rocky Raccoon checked into his room, only to find Gideon's Bible. Rocky had come equipped with a gun to shoot off the legs of his rival. His rival, it seems, had broken his dreams by stealing the girl of his fancy. Her name was McGill, and she called herself Lil, but everyone knew her as Nancy. Now she and her man, who called himself Dan, we're in the next room at the hoedown. A Rocky burst in and grinning a grin. He said, Danny boy, this is a showdown. But Daniel was hot. He drew fast and shot. And Rocky collapsed in the corner.
As Reverbo notes, that song is all about war and peace, and hate and love, as only the Fab Four could do it. These themes, says Reverbo, are timeless. This show, however, is not, and we'll try to wedge in a couple more phone calls. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, before I start, I'd just like to give people a nice tip. The greatest version of the White Album ever recorded is, surprisingly, by Phish. They did it live on stage. It's an amazing version. If people want to hear something amazing, check out Phish doing the White Album.
Oh, wow. I didn't know they had. Beginning to end with all the stuff.
And they do it, and they trick the audience before they play the Dark Side of the Moon clocks in the beginning, and people think that Dark Side of the Moon's going to start. It's like a perfect fake out right into. Nobody knew that they were going to do it. And that's an amazing ability to Phish. But just before I sign off for the evening, I do want to say one thing, and this is part of the reason why I don't trust people as much as I don't trust Al Gore and as much as I don't trust Pat Robertson, because I never trust, Bob, I never trust prophets who profit. That's all I'm going to leave you with.
Oh, that's nice. P-R-O-P-H-E-T-S who P-R-O-P-R-O-F-I-T.
Never do it, and you'll never go wrong, Bob. Never trust prophets who profit. I don't care if you're from the left or the right.
Yeah, but I got to tell you, I don't see Al Gore that way.
Bob, you know what? I'll bet you money. You're going to see it pretty soon when you watch his bank account roll in for the green energy and how we won't be getting any of it. You watch and see. I'll leave you with that to think about.
All right. Later, David.
Later.
Bye now. And onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, it's Michael.
Yeah.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. You?
Oh, I'm all right. So I understand you and Ferg, you guys got something to do Sunday?
Yeah. We're off to the rock show.
Cool. You know, rock and roll, it is true. It can't help telling young boys lies, but it'll tell them a whole lot of truth, too. Especially a band like the Truckers, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It'll teach. It won't just tell it, it'll teach it.
Yeah. Well, that should be pretty exciting. I called in just to say, I was I'm at home now. I was still at work when the show started, and you had already tipped me off earlier in the day about the Trucker situation. But man, when I heard you talking about it and describing Agnes's performance and your performance, man,
there's got to be a payback for there's got to be a little bit of a payoff now and then for parenting, Michael. I know that was cruel, but
and Ferg's reaction, I gotta tell you, unfortunately, sometimes I have to work late on Friday nights, and this is one of them. So, you know, I'm sitting there, sitting there all by myself in the big old office, and I'm just when you're, you know, telling your story, I was just rocking back and forth in my seat with a big old shit-eating grin. I felt like I was 13 again.
Exactly. You remember 13.
Like, oh man. He's in for something.
It's going to be a life changer.
Yeah, absolutely. But.
And it's in a really cool venue too.
Cool.
It's a place called the Clay Center, and it's this huge fancy schmancy. I mean, it's got an IMAX theater and a planetarium and. The dual mud flaps and frisbees and wheat checks and you know, everything.
Well, I got the other thing I was going to say. You and Agnes for your little performance you put on for Ferg this afternoon. Since I'm assuming it wasn't caught on film or video, I don't think you're going to be up for any Emmys or Oscars
or Webbies. No.
Yeah. But I think you know, Ferg or maybe someone in the horn community might have to submit your name and Agnes's name for a Nobel Prize for parenting on the strength of that performance. And while they're at it, submit David in Tennessee's name for the Nobel Prize in Holy Shit, What a Friend.
Yeah. Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. But, well, I'll get out of here. You and Reverbal really burned it up tonight. I was gonna yield my time to, Patterson Hood, but I guess that'll be coming anyway in a couple minutes here. So, well, you guys, you and Ferg have a great time and, drive safe and, you know, take care of each other and, enjoy.
Yeah, it's a 7 o'clock Sunday concert, so I don't figure on us being home much before midnight.
All right.
And frankly, he's gonna be so stoked and so jacked up by the time we walk out of there, I may have to just let him stand in the parking lot by the truck and just for a little bit before we can even get in, because otherwise he might just bounce right out of the cab on the way. Well, I mean, you know.
I know. I definitely know.
You know what he's in for. It's like people who have read a book, and it's a really good book, And they know, and they think back to the first time they read it, and they wish they could have that experience of reading it the first time all over again.
Yeah. Are you guys going to get to meet them and everything?
Oh, yeah.
You think?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's going to be sweet. Yeah, I did see them last time they were in Columbus, but I didn't get to meet them. But I have met a few of my heroes, and my musical heroes. That's always quite a thrill.
And for a 13-year-old, it's something that has a lot of mileage.
Definitely.
And if at any point there is any slide guitar playing, and I don't know that there will be, I know there are several songs that'll absolutely put him on his ear, that he's already identified as his favorites. God knows if Hell No I Ain't Happy gets played, his eyes will bug.
I have a feeling it will. They played it when I saw him.
And it's my first Trucker show too.
Excellent.
I mean, I'm not a rock concert virgin, but it's my first Trucker show, and there is no, and well, you know, there's no show like a Trucker show.
Absolutely not.
Well, Michael, have yourself a good weekend, and he will have his rock and roll review on Monday.
I look forward to it. I really look forward. Have you guys ever seen that movie, Almost Famous?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you know what I'm talking about. Okay, yeah, that's Ferg now. That's Ferg. All right, yeah, I'll let you go.
Yeah, he just doesn't have the access that growing up in, like, California would have.
Right, but... All right, and like I said earlier, I am going to raise a toast this weekend to David in Tennessee. That's just awesome. You guys have fun.
We're so gonna. Thanks, Michael.
Bye.
Bye. And I'm sorry for the other blinking lights. We've got to roll on and get out of here. I'm a little over time already. Just a gentle reminder, and thanks for the two contributions that came in today. Thanks so very much. But as I find myself often saying, you know, we actually made, counting the emergency money, we made October's nut. Granted, we wound up with a shortfall because the emergency money was here and gone. But the fact of the matter is, it's Friday the 13th of November. November will be more than half over by the time we are next together, and we ain't nowhere near halfway for the month of November. And we operate on a shoestring, and we operate on a wing and a prayer and a hope and a promise. And all I can do is just gently thank you and gently remind you that we need all the help we can get. PayPal button's there, so's the snail mail address right there at headonradionetwork.com. And we are so grateful for everything that you do to keep this going. Thanks, and have a happy weekend to all of you. Thanks to the chat room moderators and everybody who helps makes the horn go. Thanks to Sue and Lottie, News Ninjas, Susan and Gene, Blogger Texas Betsy. Thanks to John Fox, who will be on his way Sunday, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, with All Foxed Up. Remember Rick Smith coming your way on the weekend? You know, I may just start rerunning some old Rick Goodners, because they really don't go stale. And I know how much you all enjoyed Rick. But thanks to John Fox, to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org, to Peter Godbold, our IT professional. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, in whose company it was a pleasure to be last night. The folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Yes, I played hooky last night. I'm a bad, bad person. But when I explain to you why I played hooky last night, perhaps you'll be forgiven. I hope you will be. I was down in the Coal River Valley, and I was awfully glad to be down there. It was an evening meeting. And I was down there for quite a little while. I didn't get home till a little bit after midnight last night. And all I can tell you is it was a fascinating meeting. I learned more stuff from a person who really, really knows his stuff about where the future of this continuing effort to end the sacrifice of Appalachian people and their homes and communities is going than I knew. And that's always a bonus. I learned fascinating things. I sat there and, let's put it this way. One of those things that John Fox is so fond of talking about, I found out that it's more or less happening. And it's happening on a fabulous, fast, fantastic, fascinating, inspiring, wonderful scale. And it really does represent a step into the future. And it's going to be amazing. So that's where I was. Big weekend plans. This is Friday on the front porch, of course. Big, big weekend plans. This Sunday, I guess you could call them the patron saint band of this radio network, the Drive-By Truckers, are going to be playing in Fair Charleston, West Virginia. They're going to be playing on Sunday. And in something that was nothing short of inspiring and downright near tear-bringing, your friend and mine, our buddy David in Tennessee, made a couple of contacts, and the next thing I know, I have found out that Ferg and I will be able to go down and see the show. We're on the guest list. And what's more, go backstage. Wow. Just wow. It's an inspiring moment for me and an exciting moment for me because, shucks, I love the band. But to take Ferg with me, who is a little budding musician in his own right, and let him this will be his first concert ever. And I can't think of a more fitting and appropriate concert than this one. To see the Drive-By Truckers, one of, if not the best performing live acts going today. They work tirelessly, and they don't know how to do a bad show. It's going to be just a riveting experience for Ferg, who will probably have his to the extent that he's able to focus, because he's going to be going just nuts as it is. Watching the guitar players, Patterson Hood and Mike Cooley, I'm sure he'll be watching the drumming as well.
and he'll be hearing the poetry that lies inherent in their songwriting genius. This is one of those beautiful, beautiful little moments that makes the horn so much different from anything else happening anywhere else. This is one of those reach-out moments. This is one of those moments when I realize that, yeah, by God, we have made ourselves a little family here. And so there, well, I'm virtually beside myself. Ferg, on the other hand, is vibrating like a struck tuning fork. And it was real cute, too, the way we laid it on him.